It's time for our weekly chat with National Party MP Christopher Luxon.
You're listening to The Wire with Noah and Francis. Earlier today, I spoke to National MP Christopher Luxon for our weekly chat. I had just spoken to Paul Spoonley and was interested in hearing Luxon's thoughts on what Paul Spoonley had said about hate speech laws, as well as the perspective of the National Party on these laws as a whole. We discussed why he thought the proposals infringe on free speech in New Zealand, and I got his thoughts on what Spoonley had told me. We also discussed water. As National spokesperson for local government, Luxon has plenty of thoughts on the government's recent Three Waters reform program, which will essentially centralise how water is run in New Zealand. A number of local councils and mayors, including Auckland's Phil Goff, have come out against the proposal, as have the National Party. I spoke to Luxon about how the current system works and why he's against centralisation. And just a warning again for this interview, we do refer to the Christchurch shooting. I started by asking Luxon what he thinks the government should be doing as an alternative to the Three Waters proposal.
The challenge with the entities model is that with having four large water entities, which is across all of New Zealand, you end up with assets that really aren't very well networked. So one of the regions is sort of the East Coast and Lower North Island and Upper South Island. Well, there's no real benefit in having a water treatment plant in Blenheim linked to a water treatment plant in Gisborne because they're quite distinct assets and they're not networked assets. And when you have networked assets, that's when you typically get savings and synergies and benefits and scale out of putting things together and combining them together. But in this case, the nature of water assets and our geography means that I think that's very, very difficult to achieve. So the risk is that you end up with really large bloated service organisations. There's really convoluted governance structures with lots of people in here already. And you end up also in a situation where good towns who have done a really good job over the last 30 years making sure their ratepayers are paying the money, upgrading their pipes, doing what they need to do and making sure our water's in good state, end up cross-subsidising towns and areas and regions that may not have done that.
Well, you talk about potential savings. Nanaia Mahuta says the proposed reforms will grow New Zealand's GDP by $14 billion to $23 billion over the next 30 years. And she's also said without the change, the average household bill for water services by 2051 could be anywhere from $1,900 to $9,000. It sounds to me like these changes would be good then. Where specifically do you think they have gone wrong?
Yeah, look, that's a deliberate pitch now because what's happening is the minister hasn't been able to actually get a lot of the mayors fully on board. She's been able to incent them by getting them signed up to some payments to participate in the study so far. But actually, a lot of the mayors and the local communities are saying, hey, listen, that doesn't make a lot of sense to us. So what she's now doing is trying to reach out to the public to tell them that, and scare them around what their water bill will look like in 2051 in 30 years' time. The reality is very simple, is that that mathematical assumption about how you derive those benefits has been driven on the fact that only the, about water entities. What I'm talking about is there's not to say that there wouldn't be investment coming from central government in other ways or other means. And so it's sort of like an apple versus an orange, do nothing, sort of assumption versus invest in water and through her water entities. We would still be investing in water irrespective of whether water entities were created or not.
So what would you like her to do in an ideal world? Scrap the whole plan really and then
she's in a really interesting
things?
Place now. Well, she's in an interesting place because you've got the mayors of, say, Whangarei, you've got Auckland, Mayor Phil Goff, you've got Christchurch, you've got Napier, you've got Clutha, you've got a bunch of mayors up and down the country who are all saying, hey, we're highly sceptical of all of this. And what you said, Nanaia, was that we could come into this process of exploring these three waters with you as central government. You each paid us millions of dollars to participate in that phase one of that water study. And you said that at any time a council can choose to opt out. And it's a voluntary process. The problem is, if councils start opting out, her supposed synergies and scale benefits, which I don't think are financial benefits, she's just talking about intellectually, neatnessly organising councils and waters into one combined entities, that all goes away. And so then you're left in a patchwork quilt of you've got some water entities, you've got some councils running alone, and that's not going to hold. So she'll have to come out and actually mandate or make compulsory make people surrender their water assets into these water entities.
Well, I'd like to move on now to talk a little bit about hate speech, because the government's proposed some hate speech laws, and it's been a big issue in the news over the past week, really. National and ACT have come out against the proposed hate speech laws. I want to know, do you think minorities are adequately protected under New Zealand's current laws?
Well, look, I think you've got to step it back and sort of say, you know, fundamentally, what's this all about? And it's been a bit cack-handed, to be honest, by Minister Whawhai and the Prime Minister. They really, you know, stumbled and dropped the ball, I think, when they pitched the start of this thing earlier in the week. The first thing you've got to understand is that free speech really is a fundamental right of any liberal democracy, and you know that, and that we really want people to be able to have an ability to speak freely and, of course, have others to disagree. And the challenge with that is with free speech is that, you know, it means that it doesn't mean that we find anyone else's speech, I find what people might say abhorrent, but I have to defend their right to say it, even if I strongly disagree with it. And, we can all be offended by a range of different things, but to fundamentally criminalise people and throw them in jail for up to 3 years because they caused offence is the challenge that we're talking about here. So if otherwise what happens is you get into that very Orwellian sort of state where you have an encroachment on your rights, and we start to have a government that starts to regulate the words that can come out of people's mouths. It becomes about control and all of that stuff that we've seen around the world.
Well, you say you want to step it back and what it's all about, which is perfectly fair enough. But also, can you answer my initial question? Do you think minorities are adequately protected under New Zealand's current laws?
Yes, I think there's probably some things that we could strengthen, as I just said, around the actual hate crimes. And groups that may be missed out and under the Human Rights Act in 1993 that we could add into. But what we're talking about here, these are hate speech laws, and that's what the Prime Minister's been pitching at us.
Well, talking about hate speech and hate crimes, I was speaking to Paul Spoonley a bit earlier, who's a professor who's spoken a lot about this, and he was saying that in something like the case of Christchurch, he was most likely radicalised by some essentially extreme hate speech online, which was potentially one of the causes for a hate crime. Do you think there is a relation between speech and actions, if you know what I mean? And protected at the moment?
Yeah, well, look, I'm sure I'm not an expert like Professor Spoonley, and I'm not a lawyer, I'm not actually, responsible for our position on this in the party. I'm not the spokesperson for this in our justice area, which Simon Bridges is leading. But what I'd say to you is that I think it's rather disingenuous to sort of link the atrocity in Christchurch to these hate speech laws, because I don't think there would be evidence to say that would have prevented this massacre. And I think the government would be better to focus on some of the hate crime aspects of the Royal Commission. This is quite a different thing. And so the two things are getting conflated and actually are different in my view. But I'm not convinced that, these hate speech proposals actually would have stopped Christchurch, as sad as that is.
So I understand what you're saying, but also if you are just prosecuting hate crimes, then that's essentially after the fact, which from my perspective doesn't seem like it's preventing it. Are there other laws which can prevent it and stop it at its root instead of putting someone in jail after they've done something horrific?
That's a pretty dangerous place to get to, isn't it? Because you're starting to say with someone in government or somewhere in the system is actually going to choose what we and restrict and regulate the words that come out of the mouths of 5 million other people, right? And I think that's about ensuring, that then you get to that control thing where you say, well, we only have approved opinions are allowed, and any questioning of those approved opinions are therefore criminal, And that's essentially what's at risk here. And so who actually gets to decide what opinions are acceptable and what opinions are unacceptable is very, very unclear. And so I think, what you've got to do is, yes, I get it, life isn't perfect. People say insulting, vile, stupid things that we can all find abhorrent and disagree with. But where do you draw the line in this one? And the line in this case has been about incitement of, speech that incites violence. And I think, that's where we should firstly focus our efforts on to make sure that we've got all those situations covered. But if you just have a bunch of people cancelling one person's view and keeping another's views, who gets to determine what we can and can't say? And that's a really dangerous place, and that's what starts to undermine liberal democracies, and we've seen that around the world big time.
Well, when I was speaking to Professor Spoonley about the laws, he recommended to me just go and have a look at the proposal the Ministry of Justice has put up. Specifically of those, what do you take issue with? I understand you have a broader point about protecting liberal democracy, but specifically in these six proposals, what are your issues with it?
Well, look, I'd encourage people to read them as well. I've just only cursory looked at them, to be honest with you, and that's because I'm not leading the detailed work on this. But what I'd just say to you is I would put it to you, you know, read the proposals from the Royal Commission yourself and then look at these hate speech laws that the Prime Minister and Minister Farfoy are trying to propose. They are different, right? As I understand it, you know, that the Royal Commission was making a lot of recommendations about hate crimes and I think that's an area that we should be focusing on. This is really about hate speech, and where you draw that line is really around incitement to violence, and that's what we believe. And so I get it, it may not be what you believe or someone else believes, but we're trying to give an argument to say free speech is really important, and it's a continuum and it's a slippery slope, and you've got to draw the line somewhere, and where's that threshold? And for us, it's an incitement to violence.
That was National MP Christopher Luxon on the government's proposed three water reforms and hate speech laws in Aotearoa.
That was National Party MP Christopher Luxon. You're listening to The Wire on 95 BFM.